good to talk to him. And then he has all the. See, he was a DJ at CKLN back in the 80s.
Ah, okay.
That's how I met him. And, you know, he's John. You know who John Oswald is.
Yeah, yeah.
He's Oswald's manager, website manager or something.
Right, so yeah, you mentioned that.
He's always interested. So, okay, so I've got to go to the McLuhan list. I can, let's see, the who Toupin those guys are. Now, you're saying you might have a baby interrupt occasionally.
It's possible, but I think things are okay. She kind of had a bit of a rough day today, so she's pretty tired, actually. She's pretty zonked out, I think, so.
Okay, so here it is. Okay, so then maybe I didn't post who they were, but I looked them up. Oh, yeah, he did. So Douglas Kahn, Noise, Water, Meat, A History of Sound and the Arts. So this is, like, you know, pretty scholarly. And David Toop, he did Ocean of Sound.
Right, and him I'm somewhat familiar with. I've got one of his books. He did an early book on hip-hop, actually, which is pretty good.
Yeah.
Ocean of Sound stuff, I'm familiar with it, but I don't own the book. So
Toop,
but I can talk a little bit about him. So.
Yeah, but he brought up these two guys because they're scholars, sort of speak, you know?
Yeah, and I can see the sort of astral body. In regards to David Toop, I can kind of see why someone might sort of think of astral body.
Yeah.
That kind of makes some sense.
Okay, so I have that as an aside. And I've got the five-bodied one that you can see. But we won't start here, right? Unless you do.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
It's something to go to.
Yeah.
All right, so what else was there? Then there's that. And then you mentioned your child, and that was it. Okay, 11:30.
Yep.
Okay, so we're ready to go. And you got to end by 1 or so, right?
I'd like to end by 1, at the latest.
Okay, so that gives us an hour and 15 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. All right. So
we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, so it's November. You'll say it's. You'll do your intro. It's November 22nd.
Yeah, third installment, November 22nd.
Yeah.
Blah,
okay.
Blah,
blah. Okay, before we start, can I ask a question of you,
yeah.
Scott?
Yeah.
This it occurred to me when I was driving home from work this morning. It also occurred to me that this could turn into a lengthy discussion, and I know you guys want to get started, so you might figure out how to keep it to the point. But, you know, last week I think Bob mentioned that even the Beatles knew that as a foursome they were going to be a fad, I'm wondering why you think the Rolling Stones have managed to persist through all of these, for so long, when everybody else seems to have come and gone.
You're asking me that?
Yeah.
God, I don't know. I mean,
is it something you've given much thought to?
Sure, I've given it some thought. I mean, I guess the sort of stock response that most people say to that, which I don't agree with, is that it's for the money, because that's just at this point the money must be completely ludicrous to them. I mean, you know, they've made more money than they need, you know, 30 years ago probably. So I think it's just I think the Rolling Stones are kind of a band who are modeled on this idea of the kind of the aging blues men almost.
Uh-huh.
I mean, in many ways, that's the source of their music. One of the sources. I think they have 1,000 different sources, but that's certainly a primal source for their own stuff. So I think to them, it's like the idea of just getting out there and playing their songs. I mean, it's so divorced from what, you know, you think of like an old blues man going out there playing his songs, obviously, because they're playing these ridiculously overinflated shows, you know, in stadiums of, you know, 100,000 people or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't have any reason to kind of doubt that in, you know, in Keith Richards' mind or Mick Jagger's mind, that's probably just kind of what they like doing. I mean, they just want to get out there and keep playing those songs.
Well,
Les Anczac used to write quite a bit about that and would sort of make fun of it, but at the same time sort of had this kind of begrudging admiration, like, yeah, that, you know, the older they get, the more shit they are, and we should all kind of applaud them for that.
So. Who did that, Banks?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Have you read John Strasbaugh's book, Colostomy Rock?
No, I'm familiar with it, but I haven't read it.
I've got to send you the Harold Channer interview with Strasbaugh and George Gomelski, and George Gomelski started everything. Do you know about him?
No.
Okay, I'll send you that, and you get to watch that this week. Gamelsky,
okay.
He's incredible. He's the guy who got the Stones going. He's the one who created the environment at the little club, that, and then he created the Yardbirds,
okay.
And it goes on and on and on. He's still down
there. That name is familiar now, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's mentioned the bass player of the Stones mentioned him in his memoir. What's his name?
Wyman. Yeah.
Bill Wyman, right. But Wyman is a cool guy. The others are a bit jerky from Gamelsky's point of view. Charles Watts was okay, but I don't think he wrote anything. Here's my theory.
Yeah.
Croker said that the culture in the 70s and 80s and in the 90s Western culture moved into being under the dark sign. And the reason the Stones are more iconic than the Beatles is the Beatles represent the short burst positive sign, and their ideologies and hopes and what they represent have faded out. And as we got into the electronic heliotropical no time, the negative meaning of the Stones had longer staying power because everybody was going darker. And so that spoke more, the dark kind of tone of their music, than the bright Beatles stuff. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, but Paul McCartney's pretty much kept Wings alive.
Well, he kept the bright part, and that was laughed at by most people. You know, that's just for, I don't know who liked the Wings. Somebody liked them.
Yeah.
But that he's never been taken seriously and by the critics. But the Stones have to be. But I think that's the answer. They voted for the dark sign, and the dark sign lasts longer.
Hmm.
Yeah. I mean, you know, all kids are going to go into sex, drugs, rock and roll every generation the last 40 years. They're going to go into the dark side, what's called the dark side, and the Stones speak to that more than the Beatles. Probably the Beatles speaks to those trying to get out of the dark side, and they go New Age, you know?
Yeah.
So I never thought of that before, but that's my clever theory.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's my experience of those two bands. Was it the album Her Majesty's Secret Service, or what was the one that had the...
Satanic Majesty's Request?
Yeah, Satanic. Ooh, ouch. I remember that one spooked me, you know.
Yeah, and I remember...
I went running back to the Beatles because they, you know, I didn't... That was a little dark for me.
Yeah, so LaRouche in 1980, I think it was whatever tour was happening around then, LaRouche really went after the Stones as hoiking up all the bad stuff that LaRouche was against, you know, intellectually. He said, that's Aristotelian hedonism, and that's fucking up this culture. And he said that Dope Inc. brought out the Stones. This is another aspect. Dope Inc. brought out the Stones to keep the whole drug market going. And I told Neufeld that, you know, Broken Soul Scene, that whole thing about Canada being the fountain of the indie movement of the last 7 years, it's because there's a big dope stronghold coming out of Vancouver. So they need the bands to be doing their drugs to keep their charisma going to suck in the kids.
Mm.
Okay, that's LaRouche's point of view. It's an interesting point of view. I think there's a bit of truth in that. I mean, the ridiculous dumping of drugs on Broken Soul Scene and all those kids or any of these bands that I hear about, it's all around them. They, the mafia guys are in there and give it to them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, well, they want to establish, if there's anything happening there, they want to establish their foothold on the scene.
And they can make sure something is always happening. They keep the industry going in a lot of ways. The, you know, the grind and the clubs and the tours and all that.
Right.
And new
Bob. But Bob, in regards to the Beatles sort of Stones dichotomy that you kind of mentioned, I mean, what if, you know, the idea that, well, the Stones, I mean, the Beatles, they could be quite dark in their...
Yeah, they were critical, but they had an agenda, they had an answer. But an answer won't last long. Stones had no answer. They just sneered.
Yeah, they were more nihilistic.
Yeah, and that lasts longer under our conditions, and Croker spells that out. Not about the Stones, but understanding why the dark side took over, especially by the time of the Reagan era.
Huh.
And I think he called it under the negative sign. And the Beatles, they had answers, including, Lennon was out there being an activist, and he was antisocial from the establishment point of view, and they nailed him, but... He still thought he could do something. And then he comes out in 1980 with Yoko. They're going to start it up again, and then he gets killed.
Yeah.
And Mick Jagger doesn't have an answer. I mean, his accountant, his prince turning taxes, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
That's the devil on some level.
That was interesting. You asked, I know we're getting off topic, you asked Ben Watson about Mick Jagger in one show, which I thought was kind of interesting.
Yeah, just out of the blue,
I was curious as to why that came up.
Oh, it might have been something to do with our discussion. It might have been after our first session, but he was on my mind recently. I said, what the hell is he doing now? You know, and I wondered if, well, I'm not really following news, so I said, Ben, what's he doing over there? You know, London might talk about him. But I don't even think, I think he lives in South America or someplace, you know. He has a very anonymous life, hides out with who knows who. And so so Ben said there was no coverage of him. He ain't around. He'd be an interesting guy to...
Well, he did that documentary, Being Mick, which you recommended, Bob, or you saw it.
No, Being Mick, I don't know what that is. What's that?
What? I thought that you had suggested it.
What's it about?
It's Mick has somebody following him around on a day-to-day basis with a camera, you know, for a couple of weeks, and then they edit it down to a couple hours.
You're not talking about Robert Frank, 1972.
No.
That's far back. You're talking about something recent?
Yeah.
Oh, I never heard of that. I'd like to see that.
Oh, yeah, well, look it up on whatever, Netflix or whatever.
Huh. Yeah, he'd be an interesting guy to comment on what I'm saying here.
Yeah, although I don't think he would come. I mean, I don't know what...
No, I don't know him. I think he's too snobby. He's too fucked up. He's too gone, you know.
Well, not only that, I mean, I guess Mick Jagger's someone who, within the context of what he was doing, I actually do consider him, you know, one of the rock and roll intellectuals in some ways.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
But I don't know if he could verbalize it all that well, like talking about it. I mean, I've read some interviews with him from the 60s, and he was pretty intelligent.
At the time, for those kind of issues, but I think he gave up or just relaxed.
I think he definitely did. And I mean, you know, again, within the context of what he did, he was going places quite self-consciously that, you know, they knew they were pushing an envelope, and he knew he was, you know, kind of putting the audience on in certain respects and in a way that no one else had kind of done so. So he was obviously a brilliant guy, but I just don't know if he could verbalize it in such a way as to make sense of what he was actually doing.
Yeah, I'd
be really surprised if he could. Probably. Be interested.
Beg your pardon? Last word?
I'd be surprised if he could or if he'd be interested in doing
it. The watershed was when he visited Zappa. And Zappa kicked him out of his house. Do you know that story?
No, I heard something about that. Dave told me something about that with Dylan or something.
Oh, no, Dylan's the second case. That's in 1982, but like in the late 60s, he came. He had been hanging around L.A. and with the Plaster Cat, Pamela DeBar and the groupies there. What were they called? The group?
The GTOs?
GTOs and all that. And hanging around Zappa's place. And I don't know when this incident took place, but he was with Frank in his home, and he pulled out a joint and lit it up. And Frank said, "You got to go. We don't smoke around here. I don't want to have that to get me in trouble. You know, I don't want to get busted." So he kicked Mick Jagger out, and that might have been the end of Jagger's intellectual life.
Interesting.
He didn't make it with Zappa, so then he got cynical, or I don't know. You know, he tuned out.
Yeah.
He hung around with Warhol. He knew what scene to hang around, but thought that was ridiculous. There was no intellectuality going there. It was just a move by Warhol, whatever he was doing, that had some image power, but there was no thinking around it or talking.
Did Zappa ever comment on Warhol?
Who?
Zappa, did he ever comment on Warhol?
I don't think so. I don't know of any. Oh, did you see the lost interview they found? Or I have never heard of it before. This new long interview with Zappa I sent out.
Oh, I'm looking forward to that. I haven't watched it yet.
Yeah, I
saw the link. I haven't seen it yet, though, yeah.
It's interesting. He goes through his whole life. Okay, so we better start.
Okey-doke.
Okay, and Bob, just actually, since we mentioned Zappa, you know, he might even be another good detour to go in as well, because that was something I wanted to...
Yeah, I said, where does Zappa fit in this mix, you know, this thing I laid out? And then I did come up with an answer, didn't I? Then Jim said chemical discount analog tongue, and I said, yeah, that could be Zappa.
Okay. But I'm thinking parlay from Meltzer into Meltzer and Zappa, we wanted to bring that in at some point.
Yeah, it's you might be able to fill us in a few statements he makes about Zappa, because there's an interesting tension. I mean, from Meltzer's side, I don't know if Zappa was aware of Meltzer.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, you can go wherever you want to go.
Okay.
It'll probably be right, but I don't know which way to go, so you start it.
Okay.
these are awesome talks, by the way. I just want to affirm. I saw a couple years ago when Dweezil was touring around with Frank's band, and Steve Vai came out on stage, and I'd never seen them. And they got into a guitar session where, I don't go to a lot of concerts, but I always go, oh, he can't push it any harder than that, and then he would push it harder. And I'd go, oh, my God. And, you know, this is what's, feels like happening here,
Yeah, I think it's really good.
It's good stuff. So that being said.
What'd you say?
Bob, do you know Dweezil?
Yes, I've talked to him a couple times. I don't know him well.
Okay, the only reason I ask is that Scott just made me remember something. I think one of the first emails I got with rockcritics.com might have been in regards to, like, from someone kind of, that I didn't know, someone out of the blue.
Yeah.
Was from Dweezil Zappa, which was really weird. At first I thought, well, this has to be a joke. But no, it was definitely him. I emailed him back a couple times, and he seemed, like a pretty cool guy, whatever. But I think he actually might have found the site through one of your comments or something. I can't remember. I'd almost have to see if I still had the email somewhere. So.
Yeah, well, the only thing we heard is a friend of Jerry Fialkes heard an interview with Dweezil and sent the tape. And this would be like back in 97. So it was, she called in. Dweezil was on. So she called in and said, have you read the flip side article with your dead father? I don't know if she said Bob Dobbs or whatever, but, him speaking to the evidence, mentioned it. And he says, yes, I'm aware of it, but I think my mother told us to stay away from that. It was a real wimpy answer.
Wow.
But that might be an indication of he was aware of me in some format talking about Frank, and that might have led to you guys.
Okay, funny. Okay.